Another episode of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here with your other host, Barrett Dudley. Sir, how are you?
You know, I'm just I'm hanging in there. I'm here in the stew, living large. Just I hope nobody makes me go on a walk around their private island is really what I'm that's what I'm hoping does not happen here today on the podcast. So don't make me walk around your island, Russ.
You could get lost, yeah. Because the owner of the island doesn't know their way around very well.
Yeah, and I can't. Right. And I don't know if he's just teasing me with this, with the option of potentially having some type of cart come and get me, or if he thinks the cart's coming, but it doesn't show up, or who's a what's it? I don't know what's happening because my brain is mush.
Yeah, that entire experience was exhausting. We're obviously here today to talk about Succession and get caught up through episode 4 of the series. Let's just discuss everything that's occurred since we last met.
Oh, boy. And I hope you have it written down, because I don't.
Yeah, we apologize for the delay. I had to deal with some mental health stuff last week. We ended up having to push the show back, so we've got two episodes to talk about today, and that's the good news. The recent developments have been basically episode 3, the feds show up, right?
Yeah, the feds show up at the end of season 3 as Kendall continues on his woke journey and ends up bailing at the last second from appearing on a talk show to make fun of himself, and that's due in large part to Shiv's release of this open letter, kind of airing all of Kendall's dirty laundry about his addiction and about his job as a father and about his just all of his shortcomings, all the obstacles that he's been through, all of his kind of downfalls and stumbles that he's taken,
at least that she's aware of. Yeah.
Yes, and that is kind of in retaliation to a lot of things, but the big one is when he kind of, you know, guerrilla warfare style interrupts her kind of big public debut in the company with Nirvana's "Rape Me" blaring over Bluetooth Sonos speakers in the middle of the office.
Barrett, I'm here in the Oystar Clamco headquarters. As you can see, I'm in the boardroom.
I see that you're in the boardroom. Yeah,
we're recording remotely today. I had a very important meeting that I had to layer up for here, inspired by one of the characters in episode four.
Yes, Josh. Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh, Josh.
We have no idea how the audio is going to sound today, by the way.
It should be solid.
It should be solid.
If it's a little lower quality than usual, we apologize.
Yeah.
We're doing some zooming.
We're zooming and we're roading and we're headphoning and we're microphoning, all the while, you know, looking at each other over computer screens. So...
Exactly. Bolin Media HQ to the Oystar Clamco boardroom. This podcast is being recorded.
Right. Oh, and here I am on the Zoom camera one, but then here's my camera two up here. One, two, one, two. So it's
it's confusing. Just look at me.
It's a thing. Okay, there you are.
Don't lose your head, Barrett. Don't lose your head. We're in the middle of a very important stockholder meeting here. But yeah, so we appreciate y'all bearing with us as we bring y'all the two piece today with episodes 3 and 4. Episode 3 was pretty intense because of the Shiv letter, where she goes full blown attack mode on Kendall, destroy his reputation, make him look not credible, and it's obviously hurtful to him, right? On a personal level, to have her go as far as she does really hurts Kendall, and it after what we've seen with him failing to get all the kids together, again, we kind of see him as back against the wall, like, what's going to happen here? But then by the end of the episode, of course, Logan is dealing with a similarly pressing issue in the feds, kicking in the door. And I guess that's kind of a good summary of episode three, if we want to dive into episode four, because from there, what really gets important is how these two, and really Logan is the one doing the bulk of the moves, I would say, up until his health issue, which I got to say called that, like, there was something else had to happen with him health-wise.
Yeah, you did. You really, that was something that I really was not sure if we were kind of supposed to be seeing or not. You were definitely picking up on it more so than I was. And then here we kind of, that pays off on this little walk that they go on with one of their big time investors. And he is kind of revealed to be, you know, not 100%. He's old, man.
Yeah, and he's not really willing to concede that. You know, Kendall repeatedly tries to help him along that walk. Hey, Dad, could we get, like, maybe we get you a water? Like, this guy's offering a cart. I don't know. Maybe we stop for a breather. At one point, he even yells at him, like, you can't even stop. You can't even tell him you need a breather. And it's just very clear this old man is at the end of his rope. And that's where episode four put me by the end. I was like, okay, so Kendall's always been sort of in a tough spot, right? Like, he's been up against it. I don't think anybody really genuinely expects Kendall to end up CEO of this company.
Except for Kendall.
Logan, more than ever, is, now that the health issues are cropped up again, that it couldn't have gone more poorly for him. Not only did he have to say a bunch of stuff about Kendall that you know he did not want to say.
Yeah.
He's a good kid. Oh, yeah? Good kid. Yeah. Tell me about it. It's just a, maybe, you know, he's just a good kid. Maybe he's the best of them. And Kendall was like close to, you know, touching himself in that moment. It was just a total loss by Logan this episode where, yeah, we're left to really question what is his ability to even be involved here. I feel like what we may get, Barrett, is sort of he now has to be the lightning rod, right? He keeps trying to find a lightning rod.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he may be willing to concede to the family that the only way to do this is to have him be the CEO still and kind of take all this heat, but then them all get back together again or something. I don't know. I don't know what his move is here, because clearly this thing with our boy Josh did not go well.
Yeah, yeah. It did not. And I think that let me ask you this as we start getting into some details of the episode. This walk that Josh has them go on. You know, they leave the house where there is plenty of space to sit, things to do, meals to be had, drinks to be shared. Josh pushes them out to take this walk on his island. And, you know, I don't know where we are. They take a helicopter, and then they get on planes, and then they get into cars. And so I don't know if they've flown up, like, off to, like, to Martha's Vineyard or something like that, or where they are. I don't think it's, like, too far away, because they're talking about how they, you know, they got wives to get back to, all that type of thing. So it's somewhere still coastal, obviously. So
within a few hours.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's just, you know, it's Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket or something like that. But this walk that Josh has them go on is almost like it was a test, right? He's kind of putting them out here in this uncomfortable wilderness situation. They're both dressed for the city, right? Meanwhile, Josh, as you kind of alluded to, has about a dozen layers on, which he seems to keep mixing and matching. Like, at the house, he's got, like, thermal vest, hoodie, jacket, and then he's like, hold on one sec before we go on this walk. And then he goes out, and then he, like, grabs his beanie, and he, like, swaps out, like, the one top coat for, like, a different hoodie, jacket, but then, like, throws a vest on it. But something underneath, like, slipped off during that same time. There's, like, seven or eight layers that are just, like, mixing throughout the journey here. So, I, you know, the there was something about that little escapade that they went on that I think was almost meant to like push some buttons and push them out of their comfort zone and see kind of how they reacted to with each other in this uncomfortable situation. Right.
And yeah. And especially after all the barbs
that
Logan threw his way about being kind of a country boy or whatever. And it was almost like, okay, old man, because that, to your point, not only are you on this incredibly fine property with more than enough places around the general home area to meet, this is very clearly an elderly man.
Right. Right.
Like, this was absolutely a test of strength. He was like, I'm going to drag this old fucking, because he's sitting here saying, I'm going to be the guy. I've got you. Like, this kid's going to be back in the fold. He's a good kid. Everything's going to be fine. I'm in total control. Because as Adrian Brody's character puts it, Josh, excuse me, he's like, I've got a gun to your head. I mean, he's point blank telling them, like, this is it. This is it. If you can't get me, it's over. And they don't get him. And that's the thing where I'm, by the way, dapping up Stewie and what's his name?
Stewie and Sandy are the two hostile takeover candidates, I believe.
Dapping him up right outside Kendall's private plane window so that he doesn't even care to wait to let this dude take off before he's like showing him point blank, like, you're totally fucked.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty cold.
Here's the thing. I got to pull the tape and run back episode one. Because, or maybe it's two, I can't remember which at the moment. Might actually be two. It might actually be the episode where all three kids are locked up in Kendall's ex-wife's place. But he excuses himself at one point, and he goes and he sits in a car with Stewie and with a woman who is like proxy for Sandy or something, and who we see in the trailers for upcoming episodes and, you know, what's left on this season of Succession. And he meets with them covertly and he lies about where he's going. And I don't remember what their conversation was. It was very vague, as a lot of the business talk and business jargon and legalese of like what is actually happening with like the machinations of this company's sale, stock, leverage takeover, buyout, whatever the shit it is. When he leaves that car with them, I didn't get the feeling that he was necessarily like out on the Sandy and Stewie takeover. Like, that's it felt more to me like that's still a card he has to play himself, right? Like,
in terms of Kendall?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I think that's
this episode made it seem like Kendall, you know, one of the reasons that he goes and does this with his dad, which he does not want to do, right? is to put on a good show for Josh and to convince Josh to side with them on this shareholders meeting, with them on the board, which maybe he needs, but I don't necessarily, all I'm saying is I'm unclear on Kendall's relationship to the Stewie and Sandy takeover.
So I think the way Josh puts it is like, basically, regardless of if Kendall is able to convince Sandy and Stewie, regardless of if Logan is able to pull all these other strings and pull off all these other things, they're both screwed if he sells or he sides with whoever he sides. Now, to your point, Kendall is in bed with Stewie in some capacity.
We've seen him meet multiple times.
We've seen him deliver the Trojan horse thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's something there.
Right.
And we just don't really know to what extent. Now, that's obviously going to come more into play as Josh has chosen, or at least it seems, to meet with Sandy and Stewie after kind of playing it up, you know, fuck Sandy and Stewie for sure. Now he's immediately there, like, dapping him up right outside the plane with Kendall, which Kendall has to see, and that's the thing. I couldn't get a read on Kendall's face whether that was something he was entirely worried about, or maybe he was like, I may have fallen into some good luck here.
I think that one thing that we've talked about over the course of these four episodes or over the course of the first two is the name of the game is Succession. All three of these kids and everybody, you know, in the C-suite, Frank, Carl, Crazy Carl, Jerry... They all want the same thing,
right.
and it's essentially it's the power. It's to be CEO. Essentially, it's to be at the top of this, you know, of this totem pole.
Yes.
And so, it's possible that Kendall can bring in Stewie and Sandy. If it's under his terms, then he might still stand a shot to be at the company and to lead it, maybe, to be its face, to be its CEO, to kind of navigate and be at the helm, but with their backing and ownership instead of his family's. But if he loses some of these big investors, he essentially loses control. He loses, having the game played on his terms, and so right. he would just be out if these investors like Josh move over to Sandy and Stewie's side. It could be something like that.
Gotcha. That would make sense.
Let me ask you a question, just critically about the plot of the show right now. Are you drowning a little bit in what's going on plot-wise, whether it's with Tom and Greg or whether it's with what is the literal like mechanics of what is supposed to be happening business-wise? Or is that just all gravy and like we're so focused on the relationships that it doesn't really matter for you?
The first couple episodes, as you said earlier, there was like such an outrageous amount of business jargon and succession-y talk going on that I really couldn't get a feel for what exactly, like the detail of it. Now, after episode 4, I think they've done a pretty decent job at least, because like, keep in mind, I have very literally no like experience as a high-powered executive in corporate America.
And almost nobody watching the show does. That's
right.
Right. I don't either. And so it's like, I don't know. I just wish that maybe there was I'm not asking. It's a really hard line to walk, right? Because I don't want a bunch of exposition. I don't want a bunch of characters having lines where they're like telling me what is going on, like I'm a 5-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I think the areas that I'm confused are still like Greg. I just don't. So why would he want to be head of any? Okay, so here's where I'm at, theory wise. Let's just get into theories. Okay,
you want to get into some theories? Okay,
Tom, you're telling me that motherfucker isn't wearing a wire.
So this is a very popular theory on Twitter. I think it was, if not started by, popularized by Jason Concepcion Network on Twitter.
Oh, why are you giving him credit for my shit, bro? I haven't even seen that. I just watched the episode right before we started recording.
Oh, but had you not heard this after episode 3?
No. Oh, this got caught up.
Oh, this is a very popular theory that Tom.
I don't really fuck with anybody else's shit except ours at this point, though. So, okay, I didn't realize that was popular.
But if you're on Twitter at all on like a Sunday or Monday, like this shit pops up. You know, it just pops up.
Yeah, I just do. I'm 10 years deep, so I do a good job of filtering myself, so I don't see any Succession spoilers, but. To your point.
Yeah, but this is a theory that's out there.
The Tom theory that he's potentially already proactively wearing a wire.
Yeah.
I think where this ties in big picture is Kendall has Greg. Cousin Greg.
Maybe. Signed himself.
I think Greg is inserting himself intentionally into Logan's camp as a mole. This whole situation, why would he take a role in Parks? He knows Parks is fucked. Tom is literally telling everybody, I'm going to prison. Like, dude, no, this is not where he... Like, and what he gave up to get here is the reason I know he's a mole. $100 million, and you're telling me the thing he wanted from Logan Roy... The thing he asked for, not money, was to be head of fucking an amusement park?
Yeah. Look, man, I think that just devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
Greg, like, he is, we've talked about, we've had this conversation a little bit in the Discord as well. The Cord is strong. Shouts to the Cord.
Yeah.
But like, you know, is Greg a pawn or a player? And
right.
and my reaction to that is that all of these people that aren't Logan essentially are both, and so, you know, Greg is sometimes naive and sometimes seems like an idiot, but a lot like, you know, we compare him to Paris Hilton or something, like somebody that is kind of playing this game as adult, as part of their shtick, as part of their maneuvering. So we know that Greg the motherfucking egg is a lot smarter than he kind of lets on sometimes. But at the same time, he wants to be in the mix. He wants to be in the mix with the Roys. He wants to be in the mix at Waystar. He wants it makes me think of some stuff that I've read just about like our generation in general, millennials, like the perception of our lifestyle is far more important to us than any of the actual metrics or concrete things behind it.
Right.
So Greg being in the mix at Waystar Royco and like buying this stupid $40,000 watch and eating the Orlathon birds with a napkin over his head and like being in the building and like just all of that shit is way more important to him than like $100 million in cash is, right?
It seems so, but I mean, he also like to me, he's been with Kendall. There's no reason for me to believe that he has not been with Kendall this whole time. You got to remember, Greg is the whole reason Kendall went and did what he did in the finale of season two. He gave him this information. He had these papers, and Logan directly tells him, "Like, look, man, I think you're backing the wrong horse. I think that if you end up too associated with this dude, you could really screw yourself here." And obviously, here's the problem. Everybody assumes, oh, Logan's the smartest one in the room. He's the hawk. He's got these people. You think Cousin Greg hasn't thought his way through that? He turned down 100 M's to be in this Game of Thrones situation.
Right.
I think, like you said, he is intentionally getting us to believe he is adult. And I think that if you trace the whole storyline from him feeding Kendall the information that he did, having these little conversations with Kendall where Kendall keeps checking in on him. Hey, are you solid? Are you okay? What's going on, man?
Right.
Do we need to talk? And it's ending with him asking Logan to be the head of an amusement park. It feels to me almost like too obvious of a play to where like Logan might sniff this out. How's this kid not going to ask for $50 million or something at a minimum to put him in a position? Because like it's not as if he gets the bribe and then he's out. To get back to him loving there, being in the building and everything and being a part of that. Like, if he takes the bribe, he's in. But I think, in his opinion, he'd be in with the losing squad because I think, as we see by the end of the episode, that Logan's, especially his health, is something that the people who are a little brighter upstairs that aren't his kids, who are unwilling to admit maybe that the old man is on his way out physically from this fucking realm, that they're seeing it too, that he's slipping and they don't want to be attached to that shit. He's a fucking crazy old man. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like that's the person Greg the millennial would back.
Yeah, right. No, that's definitely, I think, the biggest wild card that's out there and definitely what I feel most unclear about. They really have not shown us Greg's cards thus far through four seasons. And the whole Tom and Greg thing, you know, I think we talked after episode two about how those guys are like the ones that seem to be either have the potential for being double agents the most or are kind of playing both sides. I actually personally, I thought that the case for Greg having a wire on lost momentum in episode four. I thought it looked like more of a, I'm not saying it's not a possibility. It definitely is.
Right, I feel you.
But it looked like more of a possibility in episode three than it did in this one. Because here's my question for you. He seems to be looking for affirmation from Shiv that it's not going to happen, that he's going to be okay, that Shiv will protect him or not let that happen to him, right? So it's
yeah,
it's,
but I think he's trying to get that shit on tape, son.
But what's he trying to get on tape?
Her admitting that they are making him the fall guy.
Yeah. I guess that's possible. But I don't understand, like, I don't really understand what that would do judiciously, if you will. That's probably the wrong word. Justice-wise, case-wise.
Yeah, and that's, I don't think that these dudes are rats for the DOJ. I think they're rats for Kendall, and that they're gonna give him.
Oh, you think
all of,
you think Tom's already is
yes
wired
I think
up
Tom
for Kendall, not the DOJ.
Yeah, I think Tom's relationship with Greg got him brought into the fold in some form or fashion. Maybe not directly yet, but in terms of strategy and what they're trying to pull off here, I think those three dudes are now on the same team. But I could be wrong. I often am. That's just the feel I get after episode four. I'm like, okay, so the old man is clearly unhealthy to the point that it's impacting his ability to go on a light stroll.
Yeah, yes.
So I just don't know. After all we've seen, that's like we're like three strokes and a whatever that just was deep. I just don't know how he comes out on top at the end of this season. I think it has to be somebody else, and I think the momentum immediately folds toward Kendall. Now, do I think that mean he'll be CEO by the end of the season? No, not necessarily. Jerry's still acting, etc., and I think that her as a lightning rod still makes sense for Kendall and his purposes long-term. He wants her to be seen as the old guard that could take the fall, but whether or not he can even position himself now with this whole Josh fucking guy that's just been thrown at us out of nowhere, what... I don't know. It just, yeah. It's still seems like he's got a lot of dominoes that need to fall his way. They're both in a terrible spot.
How did you take Adrian Brody's appearance this episode? Did it live up to expectations for you?
It didn't live up to the expectations, but I think the only way it could have is if they really gave him like a scene, like a show stealing type of character. Like they would have had to give him like when they brought Rob Lowe in on Californication, uh-huh. And they were basically like everybody on that set was willing to admit that any episode he was on was now his show. Like that was the fucking, that's how good his character was. And that's how outrageous he was. And I think they chose to go with a little lighter touch here and probably it was the right move. He did good, man. He was cool. It was just like, I didn't feel like he put much into it in terms of spice or flair. Like there weren't. I wanted some more mannerisms or something. This seems like this would be a pretty eccentric dude.
Yeah. It. My question was pretty leading. I definitely did not think it lived up to right. kind of what I was expecting. There have been. I can't pull it out of my head this season. You know, that it wasn't one of the first shows back shooting under COVID, but they were shooting in and around New York, which had stricter lockdown rules. And obviously Hollywood in general has been like, you know, these people are next to each other and breathing in each other's faces all day, every day. And so there's a lot of rules and restrictions on what they can do, especially I believe they were shooting summer of 2020. Right. So it was worse than it is now. I just keep thinking, like, I wonder if pieces of this season really had to be stripped down or changed from what they originally intended. Because this whole island thing was, I'm an island boy, first of all.
Thank you for getting that in there. We all needed that.
Josh is an island boy, obviously. Yeah, I don't know. It felt really weird to me, dude. I didn't. Like, I liked the structure. I liked them having to go chase this guy down. But then I thought that Adrian Brody, like you're saying, I thought his character was a little weak, you know, a little watered down. And then this awkward stroll that he takes them on. I don't know, man. I know we had, we'll get to this, and I know we had split. We had, I think we had different feelings about episode three, which I saw a lot of mixed feelings about episode three out there. But I loved it. I absolutely loved episode three. I know that other people thought it was a weaker episode.
My dad loved it. He was like, it was the one that sucked him completely back in. Yeah. He said that he was that they fully had redeemed any flaw they had through the first two. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And then this episode, I was just, you know, I didn't think it was bad. No episode of the show is bad. But I don't know. It just, I was so stoked for Adrian Brody. And then I just thought the whole island trip around, walking around, the whole thing was just a little, I don't know, a little off to me in some way.
I didn't get sucked in the way episode three had a lot of people stoked again.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The momentum that has carried from where I was at last time we spoke and after episode two, I was still very concerned with their ability to navigate the plot of this season in an interesting way. And I think that while this definitely was a bit of a letdown episode four, just because the Adrian Brody thing it was just kind of like, okay, that could have been literally fucking anybody then.
Yeah, they didn't need Adrian Brody for that.
Yeah, I've seen The Pianist. I know what this dude's capable of. You could have gone with any motherfucker for this role. So that was a little weird. Maybe he's just a huge fan of the show. I have no clue. Maybe he's going to be more heavily involved and his character will get weirder or cooler. I have no clue. Yeah.
There's got to be more.
But I was still, structurally, from a plot standpoint, and with where they have all the characters and the current drama of the family and the business and the feds and these investors and the Sandy and Stewie situation, I am fully back into Succession fan mode, where there is enough going on and enough that I'm interested in that I have no more complaints. It is what you and I discussed. We're going to live in this bubble for at least another season, I'm guessing, this Logan bubble. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But within it, if they can put enough interesting pieces in play, then I won't say shit. And I feel like through the fourth episode, what we have at least four more. Is it 10 or 8?
Somebody told us that this was 9 this season, but I actually don't know.
I mean, if you look at it from just what's happened through these four episodes standpoint, I think it's kind of been enough really interesting. Like, between Tom and Greg's, which side are they on, and the federal government's involvement, and Kendall seemingly being kind of like, while he maybe has not been able to get his brothers and sister on the line, he's always kind of been one step ahead of them when it came down to it, right? Like, he didn't tell any of them about what he did last season, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He just went and did that shit. And I don't think he's telling any of them what he's doing now, because, like, he gave them another chance to get on board, and they didn't. And now I think he's going full, let's use every possible thing we have, including Greg wearing a wire or Tom wearing a wire or both or every... I think he's weaseling a little bit harder than we've seen so far, and that maybe that's what this back half of the season is going to get into, some of the more devious, sneaky things that Kendall's been up to.
Plays that he's been making. Yeah, you kind of made reference to it, talking about like as long as what happens inside the bubble is interesting, then it all works. And the word that I kept thinking about when we left episode 3 was stakes, right? Like, I could actually feel the stakes of that episode, because it did something that we haven't seen before. The Roy's love language, the kids, what are they most comfortable doing? Sitting around a room and talking shit to each other.
Right.
And in episode 2, we started seeing buttons get pushed, right? There was that great line that we forgot to mention where Shiv just tosses it out at Roman, where she's like, you love showing everybody your pee-pee, but you know eventually you're going to have to fuck something. And it's just like, that was a step too far, right? And he walks out of the room, and Connor has to go back and bring him back in. But they're so comfortable just laying into one another, but it's always okay at the end of the day. And then in episode 3, like, you could feel it oozing out of Shiv, how fucking pissed she was at the rape me thing. And I mean, that was so intense, dude. Like, it was a awesome move by Kendall, by the way. Like, but you just felt the stakes. And when she walks up to his office and like opens his planner or his counter or whatever and just spits in it, I mean, you could just, you're legitimately wondering if this relationship is now fracturing the same way that Kendall's has with his dad. Right? Like, is this repairable? Can these two people, you know, can this genie be put back in the bottle, right?
And that's the thing that I think has been so disappointing about Shiv this season, though, is that she's seemingly all in on Logan now.
Right. And I mean, trying to get the whole family, all the brothers, to go in on this open letter, which eviscerates Kendall with nothing but like truth and facts, right? Just airing that dirty laundry, which completely guts him. So far more than anything you could say. I mean, she could hit below the belt all she wanted to when they're in their little family gatherings. They all can. But it's both of the moves they make are on full display, right?
Public.
They ruin appearances, like public appearances, for the other. And it's like, that's very hard to overcome. So I like that they raised the stakes within, you know, the sibling game, essentially. And really, for the time being, cement those two sides. Kendall being on his own side and against his father, and Shiv being, you know, and you said this after a couple episodes as well, but like, Shiv has really like shown her true colors, you might say, in this season. She was a more likable, had a more appealing character through the first two seasons, and now as she's put herself over on this, you know, heir to Logan trajectory, we see some uglier moments, and while the rape me over the loudspeaker scene is kind of like, you know, the nail in the coffin, I think that Kendall continuing to tell her both in Reva's apartment and then again at that gala or whatever they go to for the protection of journalists,
right?
Where he's like, he's like, it's you. This is you now. You know, you're the mouthpiece. You're the punching bag. You're him. You're this. Just all of it, right? And like that, you know that that's eating inside of her.
Yeah, I just don't know how she comes back from like all of the decisions.
Right.
It doesn't seem like she has an opportunity to come back to Kendall's side. Like you said, the spitting in the journal thing really seemed like a definitive moment of fuck him. I'm fully on board to take him all the way down. And the rape me scene was Kendall at his finest. He's one step ahead of his sister again. I mean, sure, she said a bunch of stuff publicly that I think most people who needed to know already did, but she can't recover from what he did. You know, that's not her image, her one shot, every shot she's had at gaining some ground, some momentum, some esteem at this company has completely fallen flat.
It always falls flat. You know, and she had her legs cut out under her by him in that moment, but even by everybody that she's working with now, right? Like Frank and Carl don't take her seriously. They don't respect her. Her dad is siding with them at this point. Like, you know, she's really, yeah, she's struggling to gain any ground. And, you know, Connor even tells her, right? Like, you remember when you were a little and we had all the, you had a little post office in the house and you'd stamp all the mail, even though it wasn't really going anywhere. Like, that's kind of like this, isn't it? Like,
bro, I'm glad you brought this up because Connor's performance in this episode was his strongest yet. Where,
yeah, yeah, it was good.
He goes, I don't want to put my foot on the old man's neck or anything, but like I have it there. And then the way he goes, you know what, Shiv? I don't think I want to deal with you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was just incredible. It was like, I mean, he's finally like seeing the light a little bit too, which again, it just leads me to believe that maybe in secret Kendall got to more people. Maybe even his older brother. Because why is he going up in there now? His pitch was good. He wants to get, what did he say, 3 or 4 major achievements under his belt and then bounce so that he can run for 2024 political office when the raisin is out.
Yeah.
Because the raisin is definitely getting reelected here. They finally gave Connor a little more substance than just being like the, you know.
Yeah, the whipping boy.
Whipping boy for his dad, which is always been kind of depressing and sad to watch.
He's the weirdo, right? He's the odd man out. He's the
the only one who's not competing for the crown,
right? Yeah, yeah.
He wants the presidency.
Yeah, he's competing for the real crown, honestly.
And
this guy's thinking 3021.
That's exactly right. And when I see, you know, Logan in these conversations with the president, I thought it was funny when he said, "You want to hear what the president sounds like when he's upset?" and held it up to the girl's ear. But I can't help but think, like, my God, I hope that's Connor at some point. I hope Connor somehow wins the presidency, and then it's Kendall at the helm of Royster Waco, and they're having conversations like that.
Yeah, yeah. The show is having a lot of fun with the media's relationship to a president and
politics
and to politics and how those buttons get pushed. So Shiv's only real win is when she puts her foot on the throat of Ravenshead, one of their They're Tucker Carlson's or Jesse Waters, essentially, and essentially forces him to start laying into the administration a little bit, which gets the attention that they wanted. And we in episode three we had that little backroom meeting with Logan and the White House chief of staff or press secretary or whatever she was. Her title is slipping my mind right now, but they're definitely going down that road a little bit further than we've seen them do in this season, which has been interesting. So that's been good, but just to close the book on Shiv, you know, we mentioned how Tom is like really looking for something from her, you know, like he keeps offering these moments of vulnerability where he's like, hey, guess what? I'm terrified of going to prison. And if you don't think I'm taking this seriously, I'm doing, you know, I've got a binder of recon work here about which white collar prison I should go to.
That was hysterical.
All the talk about the ice cold glass of wine when you come home, and then that turning into the conversation about toilet wine,
fermenting toilet wine,
was
burping
so
it.
Good.
You have
so,
to burp
so
it.
So good. Both because you can relate to like the emotion of like losing small conveniences that you love, and also because it's so funny and so unrelatable that what this guy is worried about most is the ice cold glass of fancy white wine in their luxurious penthouse suite, right? It's like it does both at the same time, which is why it was so good.
I think, but the way he disabled her in those scenes was really interesting to me because, like, I'm telling you, if you look back at the first three episodes, Tom is out on his wife.
Yeah, no, right. And he continues, and right, even if he's not wearing a wire, what he continues to do is prove to himself that she does not give two shits about whether he goes to prison or not.
Right. And with all we know about Tom and what we've seen and the total lack of momentum within any of this, including his marriage, I just don't see a way that he has not already flipped.
Yeah,
and I think all that prodding and all this bullshit we're hearing him feed Shiv is just in an effort to further get information for either Kendall or maybe whatever it is. I think in the case of those three, Kendall, Greg, and Tom, it's just about self-preservation at the end of the day. It doesn't matter if this information ends up going to the feds or to be used against Logan directly as blackmail. I think they just want as much ammo as they can get at this point because they see the old man is pretty much willing to throw anybody under the bus except himself.
Yep. Yep.
But I think, like I said, I feel like we're in a good spot. I'm excited for the show, and I'm excited to watch this upcoming episode, and it feels good to be back there because I wasn't really there in the first two episodes, just kind of treading water and doing the same shit, even with all the snappy lines and the great writing. As always, it's better than almost everything else on TV.
Yep.
But I was hoping for some plot stuff that would make me go, okay. And we're getting some of that to where now we've got a lot of potential betrayal up in the air. And that's what I'm here for. That's what I want to see on this show. It's the same thing I wanted to see on Game of Thrones, all the backstabbing and the drama and the politics of it all, like coming to fruition over time. That's what they're doing. I feel like they're doing better this season than maybe they have in the first two even. It's just been a bigger piece of it because they were going to need to be able to execute on a higher level when it came to storyline to keep the momentum with this show because as we know, and as we've discussed frequently, shit gets played quick these days, man. There's a lot of options out there.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's get to some of the other ones, shall we?
Some of the other what?
Some of the other options out there. For television
shows. Do you let me bust a quick few more notes at you that I wanted to make sure that we covered. We talked about Josh's choice of fashion.
Yes.
Kendall has resorted to a unmarked black baseball cap no matter what he is wearing. I do not understand this, but when he's going around everywhere in this stupid cap, even when he's got a suit on. And I, what's up with the hat? What's up with the hat?
Are you talking about Kendall?
Kendall. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I think it's the one of the ways they still have to show us. He's trying to be like his dad.
Okay.
Because his dad's rocking this dumbass blank black baseball cap all the time too. Where I'm like, what is this fucking hat?
Yeah. They love these hats. Logan's is like this, like, I don't know, like wool. You can see it's like got some quilted
texture.
Lining or it's yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to mention the hat. I also wanted to mention, just it just in general, Kendall's whole thing, like having the party and doing all the good tweet, bad tweet stuff. He doesn't buy the watch for Greg, but he's hooking Greg up with the watch guy. That just everything that he's doing is so cringe. But just a giant shout to Jeremy Strong as Kendall, because honest, everybody in the show is throwing fastballs, but he is Hall of Fame in the show, dude. He really is. And one of the things that really sealed episode 3 for me is when he makes the decision, he's talking with one of the producers, right? And he's like, "Can we just not talk about that? We won't cover it, right? We don't have to cover it." And she's like, "Well, we kind of do, but like, you're good, right? You're good, right?" And he's like, yeah, okay. And he makes this turn, right? And that hallway is lined with like these lit up posters. And he turns into one, and like the light from the poster is like yellow. It's kind of like bright. And then he starts walking down the hallway, and like he gets to the third poster, and the light shifts to blue. And it just kind of darkens, and like and as that shift in the light happens, his face changes too. And you just know, like, he is that you know, he just had a knife stuck in his back, essentially. And like, he can't overcome it. And he just slinks, the way that he slinks away to that little video, the server room, essentially, and the stuff that they're doing with the light and the film and the pullback on the camera and the tracking shot was just like, it was a scene where I was like, yeah, this is the best show on TV, no matter what they do.
There was a moment in episode 4 for me where Josh was like, "Hey, I'm fucking weird and also doing this on purpose, so I'm going to go up ahead of you guys. Is that tight, 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 tight? Old man, I see you might be dying. Is that tight? Y'all cool with that? Y'all cool with that? All right, peace. I'm Josh." Where they left the camera, the pan, on Logan and Kendall for about 3 seconds, where neither of them said a word.
Yep.
And I was that was one of mine where I was like, "Oh yeah, it's still the best show on TV, bro."
Yeah.
Because it just it's like you could tell they got to that moment and they were like, "Oh, we gotta let that hover," because it carried the weight of everything we've watched through these 3 seasons and 4 episodes.
Yeah.
Everything in that one shot of these dudes with the old man clearly in a bad spot, sickly. Kendall really doesn't have many moves. He's flailing, but he's fucking conniving and psychotic and who knows. And neither of them really has anything to say to the other after this very intense meeting they've just had with Josh, where Logan was made to say a whole bunch of, in terms of Logan, the deepest shit he's ever said to one of his kids.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. It was a beautifully executed scene.
Yeah, there were a couple of those moments in this episode where neither one of them can say anything. They don't want to say anything, but they also, like, by not saying anything, they're still communicating, and it's so, yeah.
I thought there were moments so where normally Logan would have said something, but he didn't have anything, and Kendall not saying anything at all was all he needed to say. So it was almost like smirks on Kendall's face, like,
right.
You fucked, old man.
Yeah.
You fucked. Yeah. But they've done a great job. Did you have any other notes on Succession, sir?
I think that's it. We didn't really touch on Roman. He has been a little bit more sidelined in the last 2 episodes as the focus has really narrowed on the Shiv Kendall stuff, and then in this episode 4, the back to the Kendall and the Logan stuff. But we can't forget about him. We know that Jerry is being used. We know that Roman is kind of under the wing of Jerry. And I think that the fact that he recoils so much when Shiv asks him to put his name on that open letter, I think is an indication that he is also, and you know, we get that moment where his dad calls him the F word after asking him about the fishing trip thing, and it wasn't him at all. It was Connor that took him on the goddamn fishing trip.
That was really sad.
Yeah. And just like, you know, I think more than any of the kids, he's shown that he's probably the least cut out for the game of it all. And so I just think it's, you know, I love what Kieran Culkin is doing with Roman, and just another player to keep an eye out, because I think that that's one that could essentially, you know, go help out brother at any moment.
they've positioned him to kind of maybe be the last straw, right? Like,
right.
The last person to have to decide, will he really go and fuck his dad?
Right.
And man, they've given him a lot of reasons to do so. His dad is such a piece of shit. I fucking hate Logan so much. Like, that's the beauty of the show, bro. When people talk about, The Sopranos, it's like, it's crazy how good it is because it gets you to root for this, like, nut, Tony Soprano, who's like a total piece of shit. This show gets you to root for a total piece of shit in Kendall by having his dad be way, way shittier.
Yep.
So it's just like the lesser of two evils.
Good stuff. But looking forward, we still got Skarsgård. Alexander Skarsgård is going to pop up at some point, and
he's
you
out there in the wings.
You got to think that we're not done with Josh quite yet either. So, lots to look forward to there.
Yes, sir. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. If there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. I've been in therapy for over 10 years. It's a massive part of my life. Go a couple times a month. It's incredible. It's not a crisis line. This is not self-help. And with BetterHelp, you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be available locally in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime, send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions if you're more comfortable, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as you would with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. Visit their website, read their testimonials, betterhelp.com/dragon. That's BETTERHELP.com/dragon to join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for the Clam Fam. Our listeners get 10% off your first month when you go to betterhelp.com/dragon today. So support the podcast, support yourself at the same time. Get yourself the therapy that all of us need in 2021 with betterhelp.com/dragon. What else you watched? I know Yellowstone appears to be back. People are freaking out.
Yellowstone is back. Curb Your Enthusiasm is back. Great British Bake Off is happening on Netflix right now. New season of that going.
Girlfriend started Curb, Barrett. Season one.
Oh, God.
And Barrett, she's in the weeds. She's really struggling, man. She's really having a hard time with old season one Larry.
That is, you know, I know that, like, famously people tell you that you can skip seasons one of both The Office and Parks and Rec if you don't feel the need to be a completist, because characters change so much from those first seasons. They get them dialed in, they become far more likable, and the story really starts to hum. I don't know where the right spot to start is in Curb, but man, if you're not like a diehard Larry David or Seinfeld fan, like, it's probably not season one.
I'm making her do it. I completely agree. I just can't bring myself to, I'm like, I kind of want to see how far she can get before I explain that to her. So she's like 4 or 5 episodes deep, and she's just lays there, and she just looks disgruntled most of the time, and then she'll occasionally giggle, but like definitely getting her ass kicked right now, so I feel bad.
It's also like, you know, you forget that even though we're in season 11 or whatever now, like, this show has spanned the course of 20 years. So that season one was like shot in the year 2000 or 2001 or something like that.
2001, man, 20 years old. The first season aired in 2001. I looked it up the other day because we were talking about how old some things are in my family group text and how that makes us feel old or whatever. My parents mostly were doing this. And I was like, Curb aired 20 freaking years ago. And yeah, the show changed quite a bit. And actually, it's funny because my girlfriend directly brought up, this is like Steve Carell in The Office in season one. And I was like, it really, really is. But just trust me. And here's my opinion. The late stuff is better if you can get through all the weird shit in the first few seasons, because it does make it even more like redeemable in the end. But Larry is just such an unlikable character in season one that... If you're not already a fan and you're watching, you're like, what is this guy's fucking problem? He's such an asshole.
I tried this. I tried to start it, and like, I don't think we made it through the first episode.
Before she was like, fuck this.
Yeah, but yes. Yeah, like, nope, can't do this. But also part of the reason why I haven't gotten to dive into this latest season is just because it's not at the top of the list for Laura. But Big Mouth season 5 just came back on Netflix. The first episode is as raunchy as ever. Lots of J.O. talk, so you've got that to look forward to.
Are you caught up on What We Do in the Shadows?
I finished What We Do in the Shadows. Yep.
Was that the season finale?
Yeah, bro.
Oh man, I guess no spoilers, but like I can't wait to see what they're doing with, I'll just say, this baby situation.
I
love that show. It's
if you're not through season 3 of What We Do in the Shadows, I would just say skip ahead a little bit.
Yeah, you're probably good.
It's been a couple of weeks. But I thought it was really interesting because, well, no, you go ahead. You go ahead. Say what you're going to say.
No, the season, it was very, very, very funny, very entertaining, very smartly written. They threw enough different shit at us. I've watched a few of the episodes multiple times already because they're just fun. They're a good thing for before bed for me, too, because they made me laugh, put me in a good headspace. The Siren episode fucking killed me, dude.
Yep.
Excuse me. But yeah, all in all, I mean, they didn't like take any enormous strides as a series this season, but I still think it's one of the funniest shows, if not the funniest show on TV. And I just love all the characters. It's the formula is there. They executed on it with the movie. Everybody sees how that could easily fit into a TV show like The Office, like Parks and Rec, etc. And it worked really well. I think they've got something good going. What were your thoughts about this season? And what season was this?
It was season 3. Okay. And I thought it was great. I thought it cemented itself as the funniest show that's currently running on television.
Right.
It's my only complaint is we compare it to shows like The Office and Parks and Rec. I wish it was more than 10 episodes a season. Like, not, you don't even have to give me 24 like the old networks did, but like, give me 12.
12.
Can we do 12? Right. But at the same time, I think that they can do more because the seasons are shorter. And so what I was going to say and what I thought was interesting is we compare this show to shows like The Office and Parks and Rec. And those shows never really had to leave their locations. Right. They
right.
would do bottle episodes or they'd go off site or offset for one or two a season. But for the most part, they were shows within The Office. Right. And like, and that's kind of what they had going with What We Do in the Shadows. Like, most of the stuff happened, if not at the house, it happened around Staten Island and little, you know,
on the grounds of the house,
office parks, or at the Vampiric Council, or you know, wherever else. And so I thought that it was interesting that they're almost like going in a drama Game of Thrones route, where it's like it feels like they felt the need to keep things fresh. They needed to kind of like divide and split up into like little duos and like send people off kind of, you know, onto different paths that will obviously come back and bump into one another. But to put, you know, and it's kind of unexpected pairings, right? So to put Laszlo with Colin Robinson and to put Guillermo with Nadia, who he has like the least screen time with, probably,
right?
Through the first 3 seasons, and then to kind of put Nandor on his own, right? So it's to split them up like that at the end, I think is I think it's interesting. I think it's a cool step to take instead of sticking to the formula where it's these 4 at the house in Staten Island. Right,
and I think they gave themselves kind of options there too, because it could end up being that we don't get to see what happens with those pairings, right? And that the next season starts with them coming back together.
That is true. That could happen. Yeah.
But I do love the option, and for the very reason you said, it would break away completely from this formula. And if anybody can pull off something a little more challenging creatively, I think it's this group is ridiculous. The squad putting together What We Do in the Shadows is very, very, yeah. very, 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 very good. So, yeah, again, great season. I am very excited to see what they decide to do in terms of those two options, whether they want to go get really complicated or take it back to make it maybe a different house or something. Who knows? Who knows what they'll do,
right,
man? But the baby's out there.
The baby is out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Great comes back in 10 days, I think. Something else is starting late November as well, so we've got some good stuff to look forward to. I want to save this broader conversation for next time when we have a little bit more more time to talk other stuff. But I did finally go see Dune. I saw it in theater.
Let's do a full discussion next week then.
Boy, I got a lot of thoughts.
Good.
Ross, I got a lot of thoughts.
Good.
So,
we could focus a lot on that next week and combine that with Succession talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm very much looking forward to discussing. I also have a lot of thoughts. I'm shocked that I have a lot of thoughts. I really am, but I'm excited to share them.
I'm very excited. It's a phenomenon.
It really is a phenomenon.
You heard about this Dune thing? You heard about this Dune thing?
Timothée Chalamet.
Timothée?
Gillian Anderson? She's not in that. She's in The Great, though. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, Barrett and I will be back soon. We're also covering The Sopranos episode by episode on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles if you'd like to enjoy one of the greatest television shows ever made in the form of HBO's classic crime drama The Sopranos with us. Friendly to both first-time viewers and repeat watchers, you can do so on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles and support the show at the same time. Barrett, you told me to remind you, you've got stuff in the fridge.
I'm here at HQ, where you have a kitchen, full kitchen.
We do.
And
I've got
two things in your that I brought over from the grocery store. One's in the fridge, one's in the freezer. Would you like to take a crack at what I got in there?
Red beans and rice.
No.
Damn. All right, what is it?
I've got broccoli in the fridge. I've got ice cream in the freezer. Bet you did not guess that it was those two things.
You're just a dynamic guy, you know? You really are. Just a dynamic guy.
I was going to say about Sopranos, things are ramping up, Ross. I got a feeling things are ramping up.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. It's getting hot in here. We're nearing the back end of season four.
We're nearing the back end of season four, and I'll just say that there's a dog, Cassette, and yeah, I had a feeling that something was potentially going to happen to Cassette. So if you have watched The Sopranos, we're at that episode. And then I'll just note that we're only a few episodes away. I looked down. I saw this on my screen. I didn't look at the screen caps or what the episode said or anything. But much the way that the what's the episode in the woods? What is it called again?
Oh, Pine Barrens.
Pine Barrens. Much in the way that I recognized that, like, that name Pine Barrens jumped out to me, and I was like, oh, Pine Barrens. We're a few episodes away from an episode that is maybe even more famous in my mind. The name of it, at least, is called Whitecaps. And so if you're a Sopranos watcher, we're nearly at Whitecaps, and that apparently means something to you people.
It does. It means a lot to us. yeah, and it's one of the more famous episodes in the history of the series. So yeah, Barrett and I have been loving it. It's one of our favorite things we've gotten to do together, watching The Sopranos and doing it episode by episode, similarly to the way we did Game of Thrones back in the day. So for those of you who enjoy the episodic breakdowns, if you have or haven't watched The Sopranos, doesn't matter. Come through, watch it again with us, watch it for the first time. Barrett's watching it for the first time. I'm watching it for like the seventh. Go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles today. All right, I gotta go. Get your stuff out of the fridge, and we'll be back soon with another helping.
Peace.
Peace.